You need to be your number one cheerleader, right? So no one else is going to be, you know, your biggest cheerleader except for you.
Welcome back to Shares Not Shoes podcast, the insider's guide to careers in finance. My name is not Camilla Love. It's actually Jodie Pedersen. And the reason why I'm hosting today's podcast will become very clear shortly. Shares Not Shoes podcast interviews those that work in finance and uncovers the personal stories of the who, what, when, and how of careers in finance. So let's dive into it. On today's episode, I am interviewing Camilla Love, the actual founder of Shares Not Shoes podcast, the founder of F3, and all around awesome person. This has come after many requests from Shares Not Shoes listeners to really find out what's Camilla's story. You know, she's the one asking all these questions, but let's pull out the Uno reverse card and flip it around and discover what Camilla is all about. So thank you for stepping on the other side of the podcast today, Camilla.
Thanks, Jodie, for saying yes to be the new moderator. You might have a permanent job, so watch out.
You better watch out. Hey, this is my first go, so you know, excuse the listeners if I hopefully I can meet up to your expectations. So should we dive right in?
Sure, absolutely.
Obviously, Camilla, you founded F3, but what is it that you do besides F3? Because that's not your day job, is it?
No, and a lot of people don't actually know what F3 is. So let me start there. So the founder of F3, and you mentioned that. So F3 stands for Future Females in Finance, and what we aim to do there is encourage and nudge the next generation of female talent into the financial services industry. And we target girls from years 10 all the way through to the end of their journey at university. And the backbone of it is an online work experience program, which is seriously fabulous. And you got to see a little snippet of it this morning, which is fabulous. And I, you know, it warms my heart. There isn't a week that goes by that someone's not telling me a really fabulous story about, you know, the people they've met or the, you know, the new job that they've got. And that just is, you know, just makes my cup really full. But we can go into F3 at another time. But what I do outside of F3 and this Shares Not Shoes podcast, so I am a mum, and I'm a mum of two children and two dogs and a wife, which is really exciting. I'm also the founder of eInvest, an actively managed ETF business. Where we found within the Perennial Group here in Australia. So the business runs just over $100 million in assets, which is pretty exciting. So I started that a little while ago. We've got now 4 actively managed ETFs out on the market today that anyone can trade. And, you know, I have a number of different hats. So, you know, I'm a board director. I sit on and do a lot of work within the universities. I do a lot of work within my old school I went to in the startup and angel investing segment. But I've been in the financial services industry for over 20 years now. And I've really spent most of my time on the marketing, client service, and sales side of a buy-side firm, which is Perennial. What we do there is essentially all about marketing and promotion of our investment capabilities in-house. So eInvest is just another feather in my bow on that segment.
And full disclosure to listeners, I am also a team member at eInvest. And we'll find out later if I am the favorite team member. Oh, let's just see.
Could be. Could be.
But honestly, I don't know anyone who does juggles more than you do, and with such energy and like confidence. It astounds me on a daily basis. But let's wind it back to like how you actually got into finance. What was, you know, you could have done anything. Why finance?
Yeah, you know, I really wanted to be in the arts sector. When I did my MBA, I actually did a careers deep dive in whether I should actually look at, you know, buying and selling art, corporate art on behalf of big companies out there. And, you know, I love all that sort of stuff, but really that is my passion outside of work. So I didn't necessarily think that that would be a really good career choice for me. But why did I choose a career in finance? And that really comes down to a love of, you know, business studies and commerce, a love of people and, you know, understanding decision makings and strategy. And I love all that sort of stuff. But really, it actually pricked my interest when it's all about what I describe as my international man of mystery. That guy knows who he is, and it was my godfather. So he spent most of my, you know, younger childhood offshore outside of Australia in New York and Tokyo when I was growing up. So every summer he would come down here and, you know, come and see my parents, and we'd hang out, and, you know, everyone would be all super excited about, you know, where he had been, you know, which global city he had been to in the last month, say, for example, and what deals he had done and the people he had met. And these stories really invigorated my interest in financial services. The funny thing is that no one actually knew what he did. but what I did was say, I don't know what you do, but I'm just going to do that. And, you know, fast forward, and he's, you know, working at Citigroup and, you know, having a really interesting time. So that's how I sort of loved finance. And, you know, that's why I sort of knew early on why I wanted to go in there. But I tell you what, everyone thinks that you have to be a whiz bang, you know, smash it out of the park maths geek. And I definitely was not that. You know, as I mentioned before, I'm a real people person. And, you know, solving problems. And sure, I can do the maths, but it doesn't get me out of bed every day. But finance definitely, you know, attracts people like me as well, because it really is a people related industry and a problem solving related industry. And that's why I love it.
What I love about finance is you really don't need to be that like maths nerd to succeed in this space. From that moment of deciding at a young age to go into this space until more recently when you set up F3, lots has happened. What was it on that journey that inspired you to create F3?
Yeah, a lot of different things, actually. So I guess it was a reflection on my journey into the industry and the fact that there weren't a lot of females around at the time that I wanted to, you know, look at moving in. I remember in year 11 doing a business studies assignment and interviewing someone at County NatWest, which doesn't actually exist anymore here in Australia, about what she did for a role. But I can't even remember any other females around me in my parents' circle, for example, who were accountants or anything like that, or in finance other than my godfather. So there's that. So that's sort of that reflection on 15 years in the industry. I represented at Perennial a really talented group of, you know, investment professionals, but in reality there were no females at the time that I started F3, and thankfully now that has changed and changed quite substantially, and I found it very, very hard to affect change on others if I couldn't make change myself. So I set out building F3 because I really wanted to turn work experience and the experience of the female journey within financial services and getting into financial services upside down, shake it all about, put it all back together and see if we can change the way that we do it really meaningfully. And I really wanted a grassroots, scalable approach to it. And that's what we've come up with F3. So for all those F3 girls out there, congratulations on getting through all that work experience and coming into the industry. And I know there are a lot of them. So it is a meaningful part of, you know, my life, giving back into the industry that, you know, has given a lot to me, but also changing the industry for the better.
Absolutely. And I think, like, I don't know about you, but I've sat into some of these presentations that the F3 interns have made, and I'm just astounded at the quality of their presentations and the research that they do. So the fact that, you know, you're getting these talented women and shoving them
pretty much
into boardrooms. Yeah, I see it. And they have to, once they're in the boardrooms, they knock everyone away.
They shine. It's a supportive environment, and it's really important to create that so that it really is a big fat nudge to show them, you know, show these talented university and school students that they can actually do this, no problem. Give them the confidence that they need. It's really important to be part of that journey to actually say, yep, I can do this, and let's take a big step into the industry.
I love it. So I guess jumping off from that as well, you've clearly helped a lot of young women enter into this space, and I imagine will continue to do so in the future. I know how much demand there is for women, young women to be entering this program, and the demand of corporates to really accept them into their offices. What is it that you've learned from F3 students?
Oh, a lot of different stuff. And it's really about the next generation's views and eyes and attitudes on problem solving, and whether that be a social media bent, or whether that be more focused sustainability bent, whether that be really purpose driven, there's a lot of different stuff. But in reality, if I reflect on it, the same feelings that I had 20 years ago on entering the industry, these people and these talented females having those same, you know, trepidations, you know, is this right for me? Am I going to find cultural alignment of my values? Can I do it? You know, all of that is the same, but it is just a slightly different lens with a slightly different purpose.
And okay, you have been working under the Perennial business, of which e-invest is a part of, in a number of different roles over 20 years now, which to work for the same organization for 20 years is quite unusual, in Australia at least. How did you do that? And what was it like?
Yeah, funny. And so I guess there's a couple of things that are really important. So the ability to take big steps and risks within your career in a comfortable environment. And Perennial has given me that a number of times throughout my career, whether that be taking the first job, whether that be getting my first promotion, whether that be doing offshore business development for a period of time, whether that be starting e-invest. It was all risky, and you know, it was a comfortable working environment and comfortable culture to be able to take that risk. Also, I think it's also about the leadership within the organization is really important. So people who are aligned with my values, who care about me, who want to see me do my best. I think that is a really critical part of why I've stayed for so long. You know, and working with people you really enjoy, you know, so not only your boss, but also the peers that are around you, the intelligence, the ability to have difficult conversations, provide good quality feedback to each other without repercussion, I think is really important. I think that growing the new talent in the organization and showing, you know, being able to allow them to shine is also really important. So that's why I've stayed for so long. It's you know, I've taken a lot of risk. I've done a lot of different things, and I've found renewal each time. So it's not that I haven't looked outside, for sure, because you have to keep yourself aware with what other people are all doing outside. But is the grass greener, or is it just a different color? That's essentially what I'm always assessing, whether, you know, is the grass greener? And sometimes it's not.
Yeah, I imagine you get lots of calls from recruiters because you're such a star, and yet you keep choosing to be here. Oh, don't tell. You're going to get flooded now, girl. You're going to get flooded.
Sure.
Like once they hear this, they'll be like, oh, Camilla. Because I know how much of a star you are in this industry. And yeah, the fact that you continue, you know, obviously you make that choice all the time. And this is still the best place that I want to be.
Yeah. But remember,
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, so I would say there's a couple of things. So I think the best piece of advice that I was ever given, and it was given to me by my boss, was essentially you need to be your number one cheerleader, right? So no one else is going to be your cheerleader except, you know, your biggest cheerleader except for you. So, you know, unless you're putting yourself out there and saying, hey, I want to go and do that, or hey, can you give me a chance to go on to that committee, or hey, you know, put me forward for this role over here. You know, no, they're not mind readers. That, you know, your boss isn't a mind reader. You need to be able to verbalize and articulate what it is you want. And if you can't do that, you're not being your number one cheerleader, and you know, it's important. So, but then also the other thing is the onus is on you to build your own profile and get stuff done, right? So whilst I've been in the organization for a long time and I've done different roles outside of the organization within charity groups and things like that, it is, the onus is on me to build my profile within the industry for not only doing a really good job and being great at what I do, but also bettering, you know, the industry for the next generation, which is what F3 is all about too.
Absolutely. I've really found through my career in the finance space is that the more that you give, the more you get back, and you're a giver. So it's, you know, it's this cool virtuous cycle, which is something that, you know, I think it's true. It doesn't, sometimes it doesn't, sometimes you give, and you might not get back straight away.
Karma. But karma sometimes. Yeah. Come on in, karma.
But it's true though. It's absolutely true. And look, I think one of the, you kind of touched it on it in this, in your answer here, but I want to highlight it to the audience because I'm sure they already know already, but you are like a very excellent networker. What would you give to, advice would you give to others about like putting yourself out there and networking, and especially when it doesn't feel natural?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And, you know, I'm one of probably 1% of people who walk into a room of people I don't know and go, yes, who can I meet? And the other person I think I know is my mum. So it is something that you have to teach yourself. It is not something that is necessarily innate. I love networking. I love finding out about new people. I think that my network is an organic organism, which essentially needs new people to enter and leave as it goes to grow and be beneficial to the people within my network. So I think that that is a really important thing to think about when deciding whether to network or not. It's important. You know, I've written actually a blog ages and ages ago on my LinkedIn on, you know, my best tips for networking, but things that I do. So just a basic thing is just smile, because everybody is feeling equally as awkward as you are, and a smile goes a long way. And I think that that is, you know, if you're giving off that exciting and, you know, positive energy, you will get that in return when you're networking. So that's point one. Point two, I think, is you need to be interesting to others and ask a lot of questions. And on the flip side of that is being an active listener as part of that. So, you know, asking, you know, what do you do on the weekends, and when's your next travel, and, you know, what makes you tick outside of work, all that sort of stuff, really listening and understanding that of people. Because a lot of people, first question is, you know, where do you work and what do you do? And I tell you what, if that was the only thing that was ever about me, you know, no one's writing, you know, where did you work and what did you do on your grave, you know, your gravestone. It's actually about what do you like as a person, and what do you do outside of work that's actually super interesting. So ask those type of questions and be really engaged and active in your listening of that. And then the follow-up piece. So the next morning, you know, is it an email? Is it a LinkedIn pin that says, lovely to meet you last night, you know, it was great to chat about X, Y, and Z. Let's stay in touch. I think that that is really, really important. But I'm quite strategic in my networking. I network inside the industry, across multiple industries, and then for fun. And what you find is all those people interact, and you're getting outside of your bubble, and you're learning different things about different people and different industries and the challenges that they are doing, which actually just makes you an interesting person to be around, which means that you're actually, people want to network with you. So yeah, there's lots of different tips and tricks out there, but the biggest one is to smile.
Yeah, I agree. And I think you touched on it at the end, like having something, when you're an interesting person, you attract interesting people to you. And it, again, that becomes that virtuous cycle that I mentioned earlier. You know, I've always really found it that like offering to someone like, oh, I'm really interested in XYZ, offering that to yourself, of yourself to them, can actually make them feel comfortable, because then they know what to ask. They know what to talk to you about, particularly, you know, in you know, kind of new situations. We're all a little bit of out of practice at the moment after COVID. I haven't been to many functions and I'm still kind of getting back into that groove. I think it's also okay to like acknowledge like to the person like, oh man, I haven't been to one of these in a while. I'm feeling a bit rusty. My name's Jody. How are you going? Acknowledging that you're feeling a bit nervous to someone, I found personally works really well in kind of breaking the ice and being a bit more vulnerable.
Yeah. And vulnerability is important with networking, because if you put yourself out there, people will reflect that as well. So they will put themselves out there as well. Yeah, it's super important. And networking is absolutely critical to the success of your career. I can, you know, walk into many rooms doing industry events these days and I can see people I haven't seen in forever, but yet I know I've networked with them, you know, 5 years ago, and it's like I've, you know, started again and it's hit back, you know, all the banter and, oh, what about this? And I'm seeing you here and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, it is critical. It's critical for your career progression, definitely. So for those people who are scared of it, just get out and give it a go. And whether that's you put yourself a goal of, okay, I'm going to do one networking event a month or one networking event a quarter, whatever that is, reflect on the learnings that you have during that time that you are at that event. And understand when you feel uncomfortable and acknowledge it, because there's absolutely nothing wrong with it.
It's completely natural. Another tip that someone told me, which I always really like, is when you're following up on LinkedIn, say, hi, so-and-so, it was really nice to meet you at, and put the event, so that in like 3 years' time, when you're like, oh, where did I meet that person? You've actually got the record of it in your LinkedIn messages. That's really cool. So the last kind of big question I have is like, what... You've got an incredible energy, but what is it that inspires you to keep that energy going every day?
Yeah, it's a really good question, because sometimes I'm an extrovert, so I live off the energy that is, inside me and I get from other people, which is why I'm a people person, right? So everybody sort of understands that, but it can be tiring. So I totally acknowledge that as well, particularly for people who aren't so people orientated like me. So I absolutely appreciate that. What keeps me going is a number of different things. So I always like to leave the world in a better place than I found it. And whether that be just by, you know, touching or having a conversation or being involved with an organization or whatever it is, I always like to leave a positive mark on it, so that people reflect on me in a positive light. So there's that piece. I also, it's the next generation. So leaving a legacy for not only the organizations that I'm involved with, but on the industry as a whole, I think is really something that drives me. And then, you know, my kids drive me a lot, and they drive me up the wall sometimes too, but they drive me a lot to become a better person. And part of me starting F3, and whilst it started before, you know, my daughter was born, the reason and purpose is only solidified by her and the ability for her to come to me in 20 years' time and say, hey, mum, I want to be part of the industry. And I can go, yeah, great. You know, it will welcome you with big arms and give you a big crazy hug, because, you know, it will welcome anyone from a broad church, from a broad background with broad sets of skills, and you can make a mark and find your purpose in this industry. So there's lots of different drivers, but yeah, that's a couple for you.
And of the, you've had F3 students going through the program for a couple of years now, and we were talking about this at lunchtime, how I think you're really starting to see the kind of the knock-on effects of what happens to these students once they've gone through the program and or finished their university or whatever, wherever that in that journey, the reality is that you're going to, for you to see real change that you're trying to make with F3, it's going to take a number of years for it to kind of really come out. But I'm interested to know if you've got any like really special stories from some of the students that you've interacted with so far on their journeys that kind of you think about when you go to bed at night.
Oh, lots. So I think the first one is Daisy, who I went to her school and did a careers day presentation there. She then went and took a commerce degree at university and then turned up in one of my F3 groups. So, you know, there's a great one. I had lunch the other day with four ex-F3 girls who were all out in the industry. And we were talking about, is there a way that we can all keep together? Because, you know, I would, you know, I'd love to continue to support F3, or I would happily take a coffee from an ex-F3 girl, all that sort of stuff. Sitting on a final presentation from an F3 group today alongside the CFA and a company called NAOS. And one of the girls there said, you know, I've done this F3 group before, and it was 3 years ago, and she essentially got a internship out of that. So, you know, it's really positive, and it, you know, as I said right in the beginning, it really fills my cup every day. There isn't a week that goes by. Like, I mean, even this week I got an email from a girl I placed in year 10 work experience at HESTA, one of the large superannuation and pension funds here in Australia. And she's then gone on to take a commerce degree majoring in finance. And she's just come back and said, hey, I'm looking for work experience. I'm like, well, just join one of the F3 groups that we're going to come up later on the year. So the virtuous cycle is occurring, and it really is grassroots, and it just, oh, it just makes me happy.
I know how much it makes you happy, because as I sit next to you every day at work, I see when these emails ping into your inbox and how it lights up your day of these good stories. So I'm going to take my opportunity as the master of today's podcast to encourage the former F3 students to please send emails to Camilla about how much you love F3 and the things that you've done and what you've done since. And even if you haven't gone into the finance industry, I think that's also a really relevant, like, irrelevant data point. If I'm sure you've still learned something from your F3 journey, and I know how much these emails make Camilla's day. So I'm just going to put it out there that you should probably send her a message.
Thanks. So, I'm going to get bombarded.
Oh, come on. You love it. I know you do.
I do.
I love a war story, Camilla. This industry is full of them. What is your favorite war story from your career so far?
Yeah, good question, Jodie, because I have an absolute cracking one. And like, there's many, so don't get me wrong, but this one always sticks out. So At the time I was responsible for offshore business development and client engagement for Perennial. And we had a really cracking listed global real estate capability. And I had found out that we had been shortlisted for a $250 million mandate in Taiwan. And so I had gone and, you know, I'd got everything translated into traditional Chinese language. I'd got an agent over in Taipei. And so, you know, we're there and the agent's like, okay, well, you need to turn up with everybody, and go, oh, well, I'm turning up with the portfolio manager, myself and my boss. And he goes, no, like, you need to have like 15 people there. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Anyway, fast forward, because lots of people just you don't have the resources to do that. Plus, you think about all the time that takes of all these people. But anyway, so we fast forward, we're in Taipei, and we go into this pension fund office in Taipei, and we got ushered into this room, which was this huge U-shaped room with 12 trustees behind it and a big auditorium in the dark behind us, right? And we're on a table and we're there pitching, and we're saying it in English and they're translating to Chinese, and the you know, and all that sort of stuff. And the clock had started at 40 minutes and then it went 39.59, 39.58, and it's like clicking down, clocking down, clocking down. And, you know, and then at the end of it, we had to stop and that was it. And then the trustees asked, you know, one question after one question after one question after one question. And then it was in Chinese and we're trying to, you know, the translator's writing it in English and then giving us a question and we're trying to do it in English, give that question back. And then she has to translate it into Chinese. It was really interesting and lost in translation experience for me. And it really highlighted a number of things about, taking culture and, and thinking about it in more deeply and the way that you interact with potential clients and things like that is really, really important. It was, and then, you know, we all sort of left that. And we sort of had to sit in our hotel room and we'd already given our fees in. And so we'd done the pitch, the team at the pension fund would open up and work out what the fees were. And they, you know, we had to sit there holed up in this apartment or this hotel room waiting for them to ring us back to see whether they wanted us to be in negotiation or not. And needless to say, we didn't win the mandate, but it really, as I said, really huge learning lesson for me, because in reality the decision maker probably was in the dark behind me in the auditorium rather than the people around the U-shaped table in front of us. And it was enormous. It was cold. Because it was winter at the time we went, and it was just entirely lost in translation. So it was one of those, if I had to do it over again moments, it would be done slightly differently. But I tell you what, would I have not ever done that? Would I have, no is the answer. I learned a lot about myself. I learned a lot about the industry. I learned a lot about improvements that I should have made and things we should have done differently. But it was an amazing, amazing experience. And I tell you what, going to Taipei and the food was amazing and just everything. It was just fabulous. And a country that I don't think necessarily I would have chosen to go to unless it had been work. So, big war story, but one of those ones where would I have changed it for this world? Absolutely not.
And like, how long were you waiting in the hotel room for that phone call?
Like hours, like 6 hours. It was hilarious. It was seriously hilarious.
With your boss, everyone around you, everyone just sitting there looking at the phone, waiting.
Just waiting. It was really odd. It was really odd. But, different cultures do things differently and you need to respect that. It's different, different doing business here in Australia. So, yeah.
So different. But like what I love about that story as well is like you would have like in that moment you can prepare all you want. And you're totally. Not only managing, but you're managing the expectations of this whole room of the people you're selling to, but also managing your boss, like who's there, like sitting in the hotel room, probably going, I'm sure going to you going, when are they calling? Do you think we got it? What do you know? Like, just that I can only imagine the pressure cooker of the situation.
And it wasn't a small mandate either. Like $250 million is a pretty big mandate. So it wasn't, we should have sent 15 people along. We should have, had a traditional Chinese speaker within the investment team that may have, there could have been a lot of things that we would have done differently, but would I have changed it? Absolutely not. I reflect on that period and even talking to my boss about that, because obviously he was there, just how funny it was and how different it was and how good it was to do.
Well, if anything, it makes for a good story.
Indeed, it might go down in folklore.
I'm sure the management are still talking about it. Remember that time in Taipei, like 10 years ago?
Oh, dear. Yes. Deary me. But anyway, loved it. Loved every second of it.
Let's wind into our quick fire questions and let's get right into it. So, Camilla, if you were any animal, what would it be and why?
I think I'd be a dolphin. highly intelligent, pretty, I mean, it looks funny, but pretty good looking for a fish, I think. And it's always in the water. So, and, you know, I love being close to the water. So I'm going to say a dolphin.
They're also highly social creatures, which is
highly social creatures. See? Just
complex social networks. It's you.
Indeed.
What about your favorite superhero? Who is it?
Well, I don't actually have one, but I tell you what, alongside F3, I did a startup sort of boot camp thing a little while ago, and we had to come up with our own superhero name. So don't judge me on this, but I actually won. So I'll take away with this, but I called myself the networking noodle, and I had a special N, and it was quite funny, but I'm the networking noodle. So that I'll go with that.
Sure. And no one will ever come up with that one before. So I love that.
No, but can I say before you move on, Planet Money has done a cracking bunch of podcasts on creating a comic hero character, and they're so worth a listen. So go and find, there's like multiple of them and what they've done and to buy it and create it. And now they've just done a musical, which I think is hilarious. So go and have a look.
Maybe we might be able to link that in the body of the notes.
Yeah.
Best fashion brand for women to wear at work.
Oh, there's a few, and I am definitely can't go past Scandal and Theodore. Like, you and I both know that. They are a bit exy, but they are staples within my wardrobe. I do love Ginger and Smart to throw in a whole bunch of color and, you know, interest and stuff into my work wardrobe. And even Saba, I think, is pretty good for the work wardrobe. So yeah.
Great. I've also heard lately that Veronica Main has really stepped it up. I haven't gone to check it out because, again, post-COVID, I haven't really been going out that much. But watch this space. Maybe we need to revisit Veronica Main. That's what my friends have been telling me. Okay. What's your best book recommendation?
Best book recommendation. So my favorite book is The Great Gatsby, for sure. I read it at school. I think I've read it 15 times. Just, you know, the unrequited love story and the figurative language and the 1920s, you know, flappers and the, you know, devastation, you know, of loss. And that, you know, small book, just cracking. Love it.
Did you love Baz Luhrmann's version?
Do you know what? My favorite Baz Luhrmann film is actually Romeo and Juliet, and nothing is ever going to top it. So sorry, but yeah, I like Leo, but I tell you what, in the Gatsby, in the Baz Luhrmann version, but he was way better in Romeo and Juliet.
Oh, and Claire Danes, amazing.
Oh, just like the ultimate couple. And they the soundtrack. Oh, my God.
The music. The music.
So good. So good.
So good. I know that you love a short course, always learning. What's the best one you've taken so far?
I have done a number. I think the two that really have sort of stuck out for me are, I did a recent one at MIT on AI and its application in business strategy. I think that was really interesting. I've done one also with Section 4, which is an online specialist, and they do a lot of digital stuff. And so that was really interesting too. They're on branding and strategy and product innovation. And then also UNSW, their Learn to Lead, which actually, Jody, you know, but for those guys out there, I'm actually a guest lecturer for it, which I'm sorry for those people who are taking it. But the Learn to Lead actually with UNSW, which they offer for free for their postgrads, is really interesting. So you're getting to understand the new and up-to-date thinking on different areas about leadership and stuff. So, yeah.
The ESG edition is coming soon. It'll be released soon with Camilla.
In September. So, yeah, all care, no responsibility for that one.
Well, as I helped edit it, I can vouch for its
quality.
Its quality. Yeah.
Or lack of.
That's great. I don't know about my editing job. We'll see how we go. I know that also that you've been involved with a number of charities. It's probably like picking your favorite child, but what's your favorite charity?
Good question. So I give a lot to my old school foundation, Abbotsley. I also am really passionate about some of the children charity and also sort of Beyond Blue, all this sort of suicide prevention charities, because as most listeners don't know, but Jody does know that my father unfortunately passed away due to suicide. So it's really important to me, those areas.
Should we take a little moment?
I'm okay. I'm shaking it out.
Camilla, I also know that you, and obviously you work in investing and you invest personally yourself, both in angel companies, but also into managed funds and ETFs, just like what eInvest creates. Over your time in the investment industry, what has been the best investment that you've made?
In myself? Definitely. So don't forget that one is probably what I'd say. From a monetary position, my best investment may be in the small caps area. And the reason for that is because we've got time on our hands. So whilst it's, you know, highly volatile and can give you really, really good returns, it is over a really, really long time frame. So so there you go. So I'll probably give you that one. But definitely, definitely investing in myself and the betterment and the, you know, and the knowledge base I have, and that is critically important.
Who is the most influential person in your life?
Well, I definitely think my husband. He's definitely influential. He's the type of person, you know, who will tell me when things are bad as well as good, which I think is really, really important to have. I think my mum has been heavily influential. She is, you know, a businesswoman herself, and, you know, she sort of paved the way on, you know, you can definitely do this, Camilla. So I love that. And then obviously I mentioned my kids, because they, you know, they are the reason why we do what we do.
And what about your hidden talent?
I don't know if I have a hidden talent. Like, some people on the podcast have said, oh yeah, I can, you know, I can, I like to cook, and my hidden talent is, you know, I can dislocate, but, you know, got multiple joint things. I don't know. I don't know if I have a hidden talent. I would like to say my hidden talent is, you know, finding the murderer on, like, murder mysteries. But I don't think I'm actually that good. So maybe that's what I'll go with. Like, I sure. Know what I think and I'll call it out early, but I don't know if I'm that good.
Fair enough. Best wine recommendation, your go-to wine if you're going to a dinner party or a function, what is it?
Yeah, good question. So if I'm taking a white, I'm taking a Philip Shaw white that's from Orange here in New South Wales. And if I'm taking a red, it's definitely a Clonakilla, which is down in Murrum Bateman here in New South Wales as well, cracking. And I will also say, so shout out to the Mount Madura crew. So I drink a lot of Mount Madura, both white and red here in this household. We do have a family connection. But yeah, they're the go-to ones for me.
I love that, because my go-to is also from Orange as well. So Orange represent.
Totally.
And last question. Go fire question. I alluded to it at the beginning. Who's your favorite eInvest team member?
Good question. And now I would probably have to say the star here is our head of legal, Juju the cat. So Juju is Jody's cat, and during COVID, you know, was a starring appearance on a number of different podcasts and videos and webinars, and even on the, you know, on our daily team meeting, Juju the cat would always be there. She is you know, she's there, she's the number one support crew, but also, you know, she's a great legal representative because she doesn't say much.
The people who don't follow the eInvest Instagram page, you guys really should, because Juju, the head of legal, does make an appearance on there occasionally. And some of our other followers have also got added in their kind of honorary eInvest members. We've got some dogs and other cats there. So definitely recommend following eInvest's Instagram for following Juju's journey as a legal cat. I also will make it very clear that we do have real legal people too.
Yeah, we definitely have real legal people.
Bill and Beck, they're great. We love them. Yeah. But Juju's the star. We'll give her that. Well, look, Camilla, thank you so much for having me as your host today. I'm so glad that I got to pull the reverse Uno card and fire the questions your way, because I know that many of the F3 students and also F3 partners, corporate partners, want to hear more about the lady that has created so much positive momentum for this industry. So thank you.
Thanks for being the host with the most today, Jodes. It's really important. And thanks for asking the you know, really important questions, because, you know, from all of us, and as you well know, if every single one of us tells our journey, every journey is different. Someone will see something about themselves within those stories. So it is important to bring everyone's stories to life. And that's what Shares Not Shoes is all about.
Fantastic. Make sure you tune in to the next episodes.
Bye, guys.
You know, the information that is in this podcast, we always talk about finance in this podcast, but it's not financial advice. It's actually really careers advice. If you really want financial advice, I recommend that you speak to a financial planner or a broker and work out your own personal circumstances with that. But this is all about careers advice and how finance will be a fabulous career for you.